From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The U.S. State Department has ordered family members of embassy staff in Nicaragua to evacuate the Central American nation. Deadly protests that have claimed at least 27 lives have rocked the nation after President Daniel Ortega announced an overhaul to the Social Security system. Among those who died was a journalist who was shot while in the middle of a Facebook Live video. Protesters have been firing homemade mortars while police are being accused of heavy-handedness. On Friday, the government ordered National Army troops to protect government buildings. Even though President Ortega has said the pension reforms have now been cancelled, a broader disaffection with his presidency seems to have set in, and protests have continued. Joining us to put the protest into context is Courtney Morris, Assistant Professor of African American and Women's Studies at Penn State University and a news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. Welcome back to the show, Courtney.
Thank you, Sonali.
So first, explain what exactly Ortega had announced that he was going to do to the Social Security system or the pension system in Nicaragua.
Well, the INSS has been in quite a lot of financial crisis for some time. And it was revealed a few weeks ago that the pension had essentially been bankrupted by mismanagement by the national government. And so the Ortega administration proposed that they would address the shortfall in funds by essentially raising the amount of money that they would tax current workers to put funds back into the pension fund, and that they would also cut back by 5% the funds that they were given to pensioners who were currently receiving funds from the INSS. And this just infuriated the population who, you know, have been watching the Ortega family living a relatively lavish lifestyle compared to the rest of the country. Nicaragua is the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. More than 60% of the population lives in conditions of extreme poverty. So this was really the last straw for the state to basically cover up its financial failures by extracting more money from people who are currently working while cutting back on the resources that it's providing to people who have already paid into the Social Security fund.
And actually remind our audience of the history of the Ortegas. Daniel Ortega is president. It's his third term as president. His wife, Rosario Murillo, is the country's vice president. But there is a history there that's relevant, right?
Absolutely. I mean, Daniel Ortega is a really fascinating political figure. You know, he kind of first came to prominence in the 1970s. He was one of the comandantes who led the Sandinista revolution that overthrew the dictatorship of Anastasio Somoza, which was one of the longest running dictatorships in the Americas that enjoyed the full backing of the United States for more than 40 years. And so after the triumph of the revolution, Daniel became one of the members of a nine-member directive, like a governing junta that oversaw the transition from the Somoza dictatorship into the revolutionary period. And then in the mid-80s, he was elected president and served in that capacity until the Sandinistas were voted out of power in 1990. But even after the Sandinistas lost the presidency, Daniel Ortega basically took control of the Frente Sandinista and turned it into a political party that kind of served his own will to power. And spent the 16 years from 1990 to 2006 when he was reelected, figuring out ways to, essentially change the rules of the game, changing electoral laws, consolidating his hold on the National Assembly, consolidating the Frente Sandinista's hold on the judicial system, which really paved the way for him to come back into power into 2006. And since he's come back, since his administration began in 2007, he's continued to go about consolidating his power and hollowing out the nation's kind of fragile democratic political institutions in order to set himself up in power for what appears to be, an indefinite amount, an indefinite presidential term. And I think that the protests this week reflect that many Nicaraguans are not interested in seeing the country return to the path of authoritarian dictatorship.
So this is unfortunate that we see this sometimes happening in some left-leaning leaderships within countries. Removing term limits in and of itself is not necessarily an indication that there will be a slide towards authoritarianism. The U.S. often has used that as an indicator for countries that it doesn't like, for example, Venezuela, for countries whose left-leaning leadership it doesn't like. But it's more than just the removal of term limits you're suggesting. So what does the, you know, who's behind the protest now? Let's talk about what the uprising, if you will, against Ortega's announcement around the Social Security issue, what it represents. Is this mostly poor Nicaraguans? Is there, you know, a sort of class divide between grassroots protesters, as we've sometimes seen in other Latin American countries?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different people who are participating in the protests. I mean, much of the energy has really been led by university students. They've been many of the people who have been killed in the protests are university students who have begun to mobilize. But once the reforms to the Social Security system were announced, university students combined forces with many people who were in Nicaragua. They're called jubilados, right? The retirees, people who are receiving pensions. And essentially, students and the jubilados came out and began to organize. And they were immediately met with groups of organized mobs, essentially. That's what they're being called in the Nicaraguan press across the board, who are involved with an organization called the Juventud Sandinista, the Sandinista Youth, which is a kind of auxiliary of the Frente Sandinista party. And so this is a tactic that the Ortega administration has used repeatedly over the last 11 years, that when people attempt to mobilize, whether it's students or environmentalists or Afro-descendant and indigenous communities fighting for territory and sovereignty, whether it's campesinos who are organizing for land and for land reforms, when they come out and attempt to make their demands on the state, the Ortega administration will first use the state-controlled media to criminalize the protesters and say that they're not actually citizens with legitimate grievances, but that they're basically unruly gangs of delinquents. That's the term that they often use, who are engaging in irrational and illegible modes of protest. So they're criminalized. The strategy is to criminalize dissent in the country. And then when that doesn't work, the Ortega administration essentially turns a blind eye when Sandinista mobs show up, often engaging in violence with the police looking on, doing nothing, brutalizing protesters who are calling on their government to meet their demands. So, you know, I agree with you. There's a lot of sort of factors that we would have to take into consideration in terms of what constitutes an authoritarian form of government. But it's not just the transformations to the electoral system. It's a widespread assault on freedom of the press, on the ability to mobilize and to criticize the state, and to really, you know, the Ortega administration has really shut down civil society as a space where people can critique the state. And that has been a really frightening development over the last 11 years.
Wow. Now, speaking of freedom of the press, the reports of a journalist being shot while on Facebook Live were just horrifying. How has this been received in Nicaragua?
People are horrified. I mean, I was personally horrified because the journalist is a man named Angel Gajona. He was a journalist who had created his own media platform called El Meridiano. And he was murdered in the town that I work in Nicaragua, in Bluefields on the Caribbean coast. Wow. And he was a very well-respected journalist. People who live in the community knew him. He was very well-liked. And so his death was really shocking for a lot of people. And again, in Nicaragua, if you know anything about Nicaraguan history, you know, in the year before the Sandinistas triumphed and were able to overthrow Anastasio Somoza, you know, the Somoza regime made the fatal mistake of killing a very well-known, very well-respected journalist named Pedro Joaquin Chamorro. And that proved to be a decisive turning point in mobilizing broad-based support for the Sandinista revolution, which before then, the Frente Sandinista was kind of seen as a fringe element. But when the Somoza dictatorship crossed that line, killing a journalist that people respected and admired, they had no idea the set of events that they had set into motion by attempting to silence that voice. So there's a lot of resonance and parallels between the historical past and the present that I think are really distressing for all of us who care about Nicaragua and want to see the country take a path towards meaningful and substantive democracy.
Are there other institutions, government institutions, that ostensibly still have some power to provide balances or checks on Ortega's trajectory?
Well, there are a number of institutions that have kind of come out of the woodwork, although there's some skepticism on the ground by activists as to what those organizations' intentions are. And I'm speaking most specifically about an organization called COSEP, which represents kind of the interests of the business class in Nicaragua. And so they have called on President Ortega to call for a ceasefire and to stop the repression of political protest against political protesters and a withdrawal of the anti-riot police forces that have been attacking student protesters all over the country. So COSEP has stepped in and said that they would be willing to participate in a dialogue with President Ortega.
But this isn't a government institution, is it?
No, it's
not. This is a private sector lobby group.
It's a private sector institution. And the Catholic Church has also come out rather forcibly against the repression of the protests and called on the state to reverse course. But inside of the government, it's been very quiet. Very few people have said anything about, have really called on the government to reverse their course. And I think that this really reflects how powerful, how powerful the Ortega administration is and how effectively Daniel Ortega and Rosario Murillo have been able to consolidate their hold on institutional power in the country over the last 11 years.
And how did she, by the way, Rosario Murillo, get to become vice president anyway? It was kind of interesting that the first lady is also the vice president.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a very long story, Sonali. We'd be here all day. But the kind of Cliff Notes version of Rosario Murillo is that, she has been Daniel Ortega's partner since the 1970s. They became a couple after he was released from prison after being arrested by the Somoza regime for his activism. She was a very well-known and respected poet during the 70s and the 80s. She was a dedicated Sandinista throughout the 70s and the 80s. And in the early 1990s, once the Sandinistas lost the presidential election and began to sort of try to figure out how they were going to build power from below, as they would say, she became really kind of critical and became basically Daniel Ortega's right-hand woman in his attempt to consolidate his control over the Frente Sandinista as a political party. And she kind of made her bones when her stepdaughter accused Daniel Ortega of sexually abusing her from the ages of 11 to 19. And when she was asked which side she was going to pick, she chose Daniel. So after that,
wow,
it was kind of like this gentleman's agreement between the two of them that she had earned her right at the table. And ever since he's returned to office, before she became the vice president, she was his director of communications. And for many Nicaraguan political analysts, they really consider her to be the power behind the throne. So Daniel Ortega is the face of the administration, but Rosario Murillo is really kind of the brains and the mastermind and the person who's really kind of mapping out the long-term vision for, creating this kind of family dynasty in Nicaraguan politics. So Rosario Murillo she's not Daniel Ortega's little wife. She is a political force in her own right to be reckoned with. And she wields tremendous power and influence in Nicaraguan politics.
Are there any efforts to challenge the Ortega dynasty, Ortega Murillo dynasty, at the polls? He's serving his third term, but is there any space left within democratic institutions for there to actually be a challenge? Ideally, of course, from a progressive perspective, but are there also, conservatives vying to push the Ortega regime out of power?
I mean, there's a number of political parties that participated in the last elections. I mean, one of the things that the Ortega administration has been able to do has to basically be, they've basically turned Nicaragua into a one-party political system. And so even, there's some ways, in some ways, I think that what's happening in Nicaragua is somewhat analogous to the kinds of democratic manipulation that we've seen in places like Russia, where democracy is something that is managed, right? So even when there appears to be opposition, that opposition is also, in many cases, being managed by the party that is in power. And that has certainly been the case in Nicaragua. There are other leftist political parties. And I would say at this point that it's something of a misnomer to call the Frente Sandinista a leftist party. Huh. They have long since abandoned their investment in the kinds of principles of social justice and transformation and democratic participation that really defined the utopian moment of the revolutionary 1980s. The Frente Sandinista is not that party any longer. There are a number of other groups, however, that have stepped in, like the Sandinista Renewal Movement, the MRS, which is led by former Sandinistas who were affiliated with the Frente Sandinista and who left in the 1990s because they saw the authoritarian turn that the party was taking. And so they started a different political party in an attempt to hold on to the values and the ideals of the Sandinista party without being attached to Daniel Ortega and his political sort of quest for power. So there are alternatives, but they have not been able to really generate the kind of support, popular broad-based support that the Frente Sandinista enjoys, because Daniel may be an authoritarian, but he also delivers on the goods, right? He provides basic services to very poor people who need them in the form of, you know, housing, roofs, free school lunch programs for children, building schools and clinics in rural areas that have never really had them. So he's able to engage in these kinds of direct forms of political patronage that feel real and immediate and tangible for people who are suffering. And because that has been the case, people have been less invested. Many people have been less invested in holding him accountable for his whittling away at the nation's democratic institutions, because they're preoccupied with the everyday struggle of just trying to survive in the second poorest country in the hemisphere. So because political parties who are opposed to the Frente Sandinista have not been able to offer those kinds of direct, immediate benefits to voters, they've tended not to get a whole lot of attention from voters. And this is something that I think has been really frustrating for them. And as the protests are unfolding, one of the challenges that we're seeing is that there's not a real kind of central base of leadership in the movements. And it's not clear how these protests are going to translate into kind of tangible political reforms at the institutional level or at the policy level.
Well, Courtney, I really appreciate you putting what's happening in Nicaragua into a broader political context. We'll continue to follow the story as it develops. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
Courtney Morris has been my guest. She is an assistant professor for African American and Women's Studies at Penn State University and a news correspondent for our program. We've been discussing the ongoing protests in Nicaragua. I'm Sonali Kolhatka. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find out more about us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.